From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Red Sox fans are known for being a superstitious, fatalistic, okay, paranoid bunch, but you can't really blame them. Their team hasn't won a World Series in 86 years, although it's come painfully close a couple times, like Yankee Bucky Dent's heartbreaking 1978 home run, or the infamous ball through Bruckner's legs in 1986, or even last year when the almost unknown Aaron Boone scored an 11th-hour home run to break Sox hearts once again. And we can't leave out 1946, when the Sox were the favorite team in the World Series against, you guessed it, the St. Louis Cardinals. Now, Red Sox Nation is biting its collective fingernails again, with the team 3 games ahead in another World Series against the Cardinals. The fact that the Sox are even in the series has been called the greatest comeback in baseball history. Behind 0-3 in the pennant race against the hated Yankees, Boston went on to win 4 consecutive games, a chance to grab baseball's biggest prize and, just as important, break the dreaded curse. But getting so close to that prize has fans going nuts, swinging wildly between hope and an irrational fear that hope itself could bring despair. For a taste of how Red Sox Nation is feeling these days, Exchange producer Rebecca Kaufman caught up with some fans last night at Billy's Sports Bar in Manchester.
No matter what happens, we're always waiting for something bad to happen. That's what our history is. That's what our legacy is. That's how I was brought up as a kid. Just expect bad things to happen to the Red Sox.
Yep, we come here, we eat first, and then we go home. That's it. We can't watch the game here because it's bad luck. Bad luck to watch the game here. Last year they lost in the playoffs because we watched them all here. So we stopped doing that this year, and now they're winning.
I've been wearing the same underwear every game. I don't really have any others. My friend won't let his girlfriend come over and watch the game because she thinks she's a jinx.
I've worn the same jersey the last 3 games.
I haven't showered since last week because of the Red Sox. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm serious. I hope this is over soon so I can shower.
No, I don't believe in the curse at all. I think if Pedro makes it out of the first inning unscathed, we're all set. That's all I have to say, really.
Definitely no curse. It's done. Done. After the first 3 losses, I knew that we were going to come back and win, and they're going to go all the way this time.
The ghost of Babe Ruth has walked in Yankee Stadium, and he's not walking today.
Probably the single most important thing I ever do is I never end the game early. I always show up watching the beginning, and I stay through to the very end, and I never count my team out. I'm a Met fan from a boy, so I know miracles can happen, and I'm watching this right through to the end, so that's how I handle it.
How can they not blow it? They always blow it. I hope they don't, but I don't know. I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic. I fall into that category.
I don't really have any superstitions. My heart's not into it because of 1986. So I'll wait till the third out of the last game, whatever game it is, and they touch the bag and the game's over to say hurrah.
Today on The Exchange, reversing the curse. We'll get the latest from the World Series and look at the psychology of baseball's most beleaguered fans. Join us with your calls, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. If you are part of Red Sox Nation, how are you feeling these days? Join us, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Joining me in the studio, Vin Sylvia, Deputy Managing Editor of Sports for the Manchester Union-Leader. Vin, always nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Good to see you, Laura.
Joining us in a couple minutes will be Bill Littlefield. He's host of NPR's Only a Game. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. And Vin, how would you describe the psychology of Red Sox fans at this moment in history?
At this moment, I would say very confident, but a little befuddled. I really do believe people are going to win it, but I sense that people don't know how to handle this to this point, and I know people are going to accuse me of jinxing the Red Sox.
But, no matter what you say, you're jinxing them, Vin.
To this point, it almost seems too easy. I think people were really looking forward to a great, dramatic series with the Cardinals, especially coming off that great American League Championship Series for victory over the Yankees. And to be up 3-0 on the Cardinals, we're on the brink, and people are saying, this is it. It's here. What do I do now?
Well, I'm thinking about that tape that we heard in the piece from Rebecca Kaufman where that one woman said, they're going to mess it up. They always mess it up. They always do this to us. They get us to the brink and then they let us just drop.
Keep in mind that was before last night's game, too. There's a big difference between being up 2-0 in the World Series and being up 3-0.
What about all these superstitions, Vin? You know, I haven't watched the game here at this restaurant. I have to go home. I can't watch it with my girlfriend. She's a jinx. I haven't showered in a week because if I shower, they're going to lose. I mean, but is this for real?
Even people who aren't superstitious might say, but what if? You know, I've done this. What if I changed it and they do lose? Then I'll have contributed to that.
I
can't do that.
Come
on. Oh, it's not rational, but being a Red Sox fan isn't rational.
Why isn't being a Red Sox fan rational?
Because of all the heartbreak over the years. At one point this season, in addition to being a journalist, I'm a lifelong Red Sox fan. Some of my earliest memories are of being a Red Sox fan. And at one point this season, when they were struggling along at 500, I said to my wife, I said, why am I doing this again? Why am I following them again? I'm just so frustrated. But I continued to follow them.
And why? Because there are a lot of people out there like you who get their hearts broken every, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years, and yet they keep hanging in there for 86 years.
You attempt to rationalize. You've invested so much in it, and the possibility exists that they could win it, and the thought of giving up and then having them win it is just – you can't do it. You can't give up at that point, especially when there's a glimmer, and that here's – we're on the brink of the reward for all that faith and – all that suffering.
The reward for 86 years of suffering.
Well, I'm a little short of 86
years
old.
Yeah.
At this point, so.
Although there are some old timers who have been watching this for 86 years.
There are. I saw a piece last night on a 113-year-old Red Sox fan, and he's been following every game. Now, there's someone who deserves this.
Are Red Sox players themselves superstitious about the so-called curse from 1918 when Babe Ruth was traded to the Yankees?
No, not at all. The baseball players are famously superstitious, but it has more to do with their own performance. This group definitely does not believe in curses. I believe the Red Sox manager of last year, Grady Little, was haunted in his own right. He was afraid of failure and managed not to lose and wound up losing. But this group of Red Sox players, just exemplified by their comeback from 3 games down in the league championship series, you know, they believed in themselves and that's why they're here.
They call themselves the idiots.
The idea being that they don't think a lot about these things. They don't think, they have fun, they go out and play. And in a pressure cooker such as Boston, that's a very good approach to the game. That idiocy enables them to keep their sanity to ease some of that pressure.
I mean, they don't get into the whole psychology of it.
Exactly. Go out, play, have fun.
What do you mean the pressure cooker of Boston, Vin?
The Boston and maybe New York, maybe Philadelphia are the most intense baseball markets in the country. The players talk about every game being like a playoff game at Fenway Park because the fans are so intense, so into every pitch. Every game, every defeat is agonizing. Every come-from-behind victory is like a playoff victory. And the players feel that. And it takes a certain kind of player to be able to thrive on that. There are players who thrive on the pressure, whose adrenaline gets flowing by performing in front of fans who care so much. And there are players who can't take the pressure, who would much rather play the game in a closet almost and have no one care.
So every move is scrutinized, every pitch, every hit, and some people thrive under that and some people don't.
Exactly. Kurt Schilling is a player who wanted to come and play in that atmosphere where people cared so passionately about what he did. And there have been players who have left Boston and gone to other markets. Bruce Hurst comes to mind, former excellent Red Sox pitcher of the 1980s, left as a free agent, went to San Diego, and at the end of his career attempted to come back to Boston because he missed the passion of the fans so much.
Do baseball players read the press coverage about them?
They say they don't, but most of them do. And you find that out when you've written something negative that strikes
a
particular chord.
Has that ever happened to you?
It hasn't happened to me, but it's happened. It's definitely happened to people I know, and some of it has been well publicized. And the very people who have said, "Oh, I don't read the papers," have come back and gone after a reporter for something he's written.
1-800-892-6477 is our number in the exchange. Join us, 1-800-892-NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in the exchange, Red Sox Nation and reversing the curse. The Sox haven't won the World Series since 1918, when Babe Ruth was traded to the Yankees, supposedly starting the infamous curse against the Sox. This year, though, the Sox beat the Yankees in a historic seven-game pennant showdown to make it to the World Series against the Cardinal. So today in the exchange, we are asking, could this be the year that the curse is reversed? And we're also looking at the odd, somewhat paranoid psychology of Red Sox Nation. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. How would you describe Red Sox fans, whether you're one yourself or whether you have a friend, partner, spouse who is a diehard Red Sox fan? How would you describe the typical Red Sox fan? And do you think this is the year? 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. My guest, Vin Sylvia, Deputy Managing Editor of Sports for the Manchester Union Leader. And again, let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. We talked earlier, Vin, about the superstition of Red Sox fans. People are making a big deal out of a couple events this year to say, okay, the curse is gone. One of those is that there's a lunar eclipse tonight.
I've heard about that. I've read it. I don't put a lot of stock in those things. I think that this is a special team that doesn't believe in the curses themselves, as we just discussed, and goes out and plays and really is probably the best team in baseball. The Red Sox have earned being here.
How much different are they from the team last year or the year before? How much shuffling was there?
Well, one thing about this team is, you know, when people talk about curses, I like to say that the only curses in Red Sox history are institutional racism and poor management. This ownership group and this management team has put together a team designed to win the World Series, designed not only to play well during the regular season, but to thrive in a short series. In conception and execution, it's been an excellent team. There's a saying that pitching wins championships. The Red Sox went after Curt Schilling to shore up their starting pitching, and they signed Keith Foulke, one of the top relievers in baseball. And those two players have been keys to not only the regular season, but the postseason. The Red Sox made probably the biggest trade in their history when they traded icon shortstop Nomar Garciaparra and picked up a superior defensive shortstop in Orlando Cabrera.
So it's very strategic, isn't it?
It's very strategic. Trading Nomar is a move that not many people would make because he was such
headlines.
A fan favorite. Exactly. But Theo Epstein, the Red Sox young general manager, had the courage, and that's an overstatement, I'm sure, but had the nerve, I should say, to make that trade because he believed that was in the best interest of the team in the long-term interest, and that move has proved brilliant.
Could we talk about Theo Epstein for just a minute, Vin? Now, as you said, he's the young new manager of the Red Sox. He is young. He's, what, 30 years old or something?
He's the 30-year-old general manager of the Red Sox, right? He became, at 29 last year, the youngest general manager in baseball history.
And how did he manage that? How did such a young person manage to, you know, become general manager of such a major team?
He began working in Major League Baseball in his late teens, I believe, as an intern with the Baltimore Orioles. And he's extremely intelligent, comes from a very successful family. His father's a Boston University professor. One of his sisters, I believe, is a neurosurgeon. His grandfather and great uncle were co-authors of the screenplay for Casablanca. So this is a bright guy with good bloodlines. He also works extremely hard, has a law degree, and just rose up through the ranks with various baseball organizations.
And what was the reaction when he was selected general manager last year?
Well, to outsiders, there was a lot of surprise because of his youth. But to people who had worked with him and who knew him and were aware of what he had accomplished, that was a bold move on the part of Red Sox ownership. But much like Theo and the Nomar trade, but people who knew of him said, you know, he was going to make it at some point anyway. Why not now?
Well, if they win the World Series, that's kind of I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. And at 30 years old, to be the new guy in town, that's quite an accomplishment.
Well, this is the third year for this Red Sox ownership group. Now, in 3 years, they've come within 5 outs of winning the pennant, and now they're within 1 game of winning the World Series. So you can talk about 86 years in 1918, but for this ownership group, this is really only the third year with a lot of players they inherited. They've turned things around very quickly.
1-800-892-6477 is our number on the exchange. Let's go to Derry, and Kurt is on the air. Hi, Kurt. Go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks. I just have a question about the fan base. So the mystique about the Red Sox is that we always come so close.
Right.
And as a lifelong fan, I'm the same way. What happens when we win? Does some of that go away?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, Kurt.
That is a good question. I think for some people that does. For other people, the feeling will be, hey, I could get used to this. New England Patriots fans hadn't suffered as long as Red Sox fans, but they had been long-suffering. Patriots won the Super Bowl, and instead of people abandoning ship, Patriots Nation increased. And now the Patriots have won 2 and 3 years, and that's a very loyal, very supportive, very enthusiastic fandom. I think Red Sox fans could say, hey, this isn't too bad. I could get used to having a model franchise.
So you will have to sort of change your psychology, though, of I'm a fan from the team that breaks my heart to kind of more of a Yankees fan mentality, which is I'm a fan of a great team that wins.
I don't know if I'm ready to go there as far as
Sorry for the analogy. Didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
That does not compute. Does not compute. But yeah, in a sense, you know, there's nothing wrong with rooting for a winner. The difference is Red Sox fans wouldn't be rooting for the Red Sox because they're a winner. It would just be rewarding to have the team that you've rooted for so long be such a model franchise.
All right. We will take more of your phone calls in just a moment. Kurt, thank you for that call. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, Congressman Charlie Bass joins us. He's running for re-election in New Hampshire's 2nd District. Congressman Bass is here Thursday in The Exchange. Today, we're talking about Red Sox Nation and reversing the curse. The Sox haven't won the World Series since 1918, when Babe Ruth was traded to the Yankees, supposedly starting the curse. This year, though, the Red Sox are in the World Series. They're 3 games ahead of the Cardinals. And some fans are saying maybe, maybe, maybe this really could be the year. We're talking about that today and the odd psychology of Red Sox Nation. Join us 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. If you're a Sox fan, how are you feeling these days? Does it feel odd to be so close to winning the big prize? 1-800-892-6477. We also want your comments on this year's Red Sox team. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Vin Silvia is with me in the studio, Deputy Managing Editor of Sports for the Manchester Union Leader. And joining us now from WBUR in Boston is Bill Littlefield, author, veteran sports commentator, and of course, host of NPR's Only a Game. Bill Littlefield, it's always great to have you. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you for inviting me, Laura. It's great to be with you.
Well, how does it feel to be a Red Sox fan these days?
It's exhausting.
Yeah, you're staying up late, right.
No, it's great fun, it's especially with these last two series. The Yankees and the Cardinals really seem to be conspiring with whatever stars are properly aligned for the Red Sox to go all the way. I don't think anybody really honestly imagined that after the Red Sox fell behind the Yankees 3-0 that they would come back. But they not only came back, they made it look like it was precisely in the plan. And then I don't think anybody assumed that they would beat the Cardinals 3 games in a row to begin the World Series. And that, of course, is precisely what they've done. And the Cardinals have looked just awful. So all we can do is hope the ride continues to one more stop.
Are you sort of crossing your fingers behind your back, throwing salt over your shoulder, afraid to talk about it too much?
Not only am I not doing those things, I shower every day and change my socks and underwear, despite the fact that the Red Sox are doing well. No, I hold my superstitions are restricted entirely to things with which I'm directly involved. So when it's somebody else hitting and pitching and running, I let them take care of it. The Red Sox have all the superstitions they need without my jumping on board.
Well, how would you describe the general psychology, Bill Littlefield, of Red Sox fans?
Well, I think up until this year, the general psychology has been to take whatever the Red Sox do incredibly personally. That is really the thing that distinguishes Red Sox fans from all other fans, fans of all other baseball teams. When the Red Sox lose, Red Sox fans throughout the country clutch their hearts and say, they're doing it to me. And that really is the main thing. There are a lot of teams that lose a lot and a lot of fans
well,
who have suffered with their teams. The Cubs, of course, and, oh, the Cleveland Indians, for example, you know, who go through all sorts of terrible stages. But and even have made some terrible trades that have led people to think there's a curse on that team. But, you know, with the Red Sox, it's the extent to which people take it personally. And I hope that they'll all take it personally when the Red Sox win the World Series, too, because they deserve to feel better after all those years of feeling bad.
Ben Sylvia.
And I'm sure Bill's familiar with the, after the Buckner game in 86, people saying, they killed my grandfather, they killed my father,
now they're coming after me.
Right?
Well, Bill, you're down there in Boston. Now, what's the vibe right at the heartbeat of Red Sox Nation?
I think there is a terrific sense of anticipation. There is at least among many people, a kind of wonder at how well things are going and how things are breaking their way. I mean, Glenn Stout mentioned in an interview recently, the historian of many baseball teams, the Red Sox and Yankees and Dodgers among them, mentioned that the play in which Jeff Suppan, the Cardinals pitcher, stopped mere yards short of home plate and apparently had some sort of breakdown in his synapses, which caused him to stop and not be able to decide whether to continue to home plate or return to third. This was the antithesis of what happened in 1946 when Eno Slaughter scored because Johnny Pesky supposedly held the ball.
46 was the other series against the Cardinals.
One of the others, 67 being the third. But in any case, instead of the Red Sox allegedly making a mistake which allowed the Cardinals to score, the Cardinal base runner stops two-thirds of the way to home plate and doesn't score, and as a result, the momentum in the game shifts entirely to the Red Sox, and they go on to win handily. It just seems like people's attitude, to answer your question, is, oh, my goodness, isn't this fun to be on the right side of the way the fates and the stars are conspiring to run this series?
There was a play, too, in Game 5 of the League Championship Series where Tony Clark hit a double into the right field corner. The ball sort of danced along the top of the right field wall and went into the stands for a ground rule double. Had that ball not gone into the stands, the Yankees would have scored another run and probably would have won the game. And Red Sox fans were saying, every other year, that ball stays in play and the Yankees score.
It's all about luck. It's all about luck to some extent. Well, I mean, a lot of it's play and management and so forth. Go ahead, Bill.
And then also, Vin, you mentioned the Buckner game, which, you know, unhappily, Bill Buckner had a wonderful major league career, a great hitter, a dependable fielder for years for several teams. He has that one bad moment, missing a ground ball at Fenway Park, and so is known as a goat. But my gosh, 8 errors in the field in the first 2 games of the World Series, and not one of them costs the Red Sox a thing. They're kicking the ball around in left field. They're throwing the ball over people's heads. They can't pick up a simple ground ball. And it doesn't matter a darn. The Cardinals cooperate by failing to capitalize even when they get 5 outs in an inning. And the Red Sox merrily march on to win the game. Games.
I was at Game 4 of the League Championship Series, and that was the first time I really sensed that this year was different, not just for the Red Sox, but for their fans, because I was in the grandstand, had an opportunity to get tickets that day, and I said, oh, after the 19-8 game Saturday night, do I want to go? I said, what if I passed up this opportunity and they'd come all the way back? So I went. I bought the tickets. I went. And fans were cheering Derek Lowe from the moment he walked out to the bullpen, almost willing him to succeed that night. The crowd was behind the team the whole night. There was no sense of defeatism. And after the Red Sox won to launch that comeback, people outside the ballpark were saying, we're going to do it. This is it. They're going to win. And you would have thought that they had just clinched the pennant with that game.
Very interesting. Let's go to the phones, gentlemen. Lots of fans out there in Red Sox Nation who want to chime in with you. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Tell us about your feeling these days. Are you feeling nervous, anxious, paranoid, or euphoric that maybe the curse has been reversed? Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests, Vin Sylvia and Bill Littlefield. And let's go to Hudson. Pat's on the air. Hi, Pat. Go ahead.
Oh, hello there.
Hi.
How are you? I just want to relate that I've spent 15 years trying to reverse the curse, and I finally pulled all of the elements together to make that curse a thing of the past.
You did it, Pat.
I did.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. What'd you do?
Well, first of all, I wound up acquiring Bill Buckner's belt buckle, and I got Bucky Dent's sweat sock. So the only thing that was missing was something from Ruth, and I happened to go by a yard sale, and I was really intrigued by a few Bill Clinton drink coasters, but right next to them looked like some caterpillars, and I said, but there was a note that said, "See the owner," and I saw the owner, and the owner said, "This is a very little unknown fact, but these are the eyebrows of Babe Ruth." I said, "Eyebrows?" I said, "Hey, gee," I said, "that's amazing." They said, "Well, that's why we're charging $50 for them." And I said, "Well, can we do 25 in the coasters?" And they said, "Yeah." I said, so I got the coasters and I got the eyebrows. And so what I did is I had the ritual, one eyebrow before the New York series and one eyebrow before the St. Louis game. So,
what did you do? Eat them? Burn them? What?
No, no, no. We had to burn them. We had to burn them with the sock and the belt buckle intact, you know. So, so what we did is we did that, and then we prayed over the whole thing and said, you know, Ruth is dead. God rest his head. And give these eyebrows so that the lowbrows can prevail, you know. So I thought, well, this is all silly business, but these are the instructions. So I followed the instructions, and here we are.
Well, someone,
we're one game away.
Someone call Theo Epstein and tell him that Pat from Hudson has done it.
I was going
like to get
a contract.
Can I get a ticket?
A ticket. Get a contract. You should be up with the owner's box.
I was going to suggest enjoy the series and then seek help.
Oh, Pat, thank you so much for that call. That is great. You know, Bill Littlefield, again, you're in Boston. Have you heard other stories like Pat of people just doing odd things?
I haven't heard stories of people doing odd things. I certainly have seen images of people doing odd things at the game. You know, everything from wearing Johnny Damon wigs to turning their hats inside out and, you know, all the rest of it. And there have been some pieces in the paper about people, you know, knocking three times and making sure that, you know, they were going through the same rituals day after day. But the funny thing about this is, it's been such a peculiar, especially the World Series, such a peculiar feeling to see the Red Sox appear to be in command. The Cardinals haven't been ahead. You know, a tie is the best they've achieved in three games. And the Red Sox have looked so dominant and so relaxed about the whole thing. And maybe people don't feel as if they need to resort to the supernatural so much. It's just, you know, baseball being played and being played at this point a little better than the other team's been able to play it.
Ben?
Yeah, I was saying earlier on, and I have to be careful here, otherwise I'm going to be getting a lot of angry phone calls and emails, but I sense there's almost been a letdown that it's been this easy so far. We're not used to this, and you know, part of the payoff was supposed to be the struggle leading up to it. And of course, if it goes to Game 7 now, then I never said this.
Well, I think you make a great point, Vin, because people over the years, as people have speculated about how finally the Red Sox would win the World Series, I mean, there have been all sorts of magnificently creative scenarios about seventh game, ninth inning, two men on, down two runs, et cetera, et cetera. And we are marching towards something that looks a good deal more tidy than that, if a good deal less dramatic. I think that the drama hanging over this series, and people aren't talking about it very much. I did see one piece in the paper the other day about it. This certainly will be the last time, this series will be the last time that we'll see this collection of Red Sox. We may have seen Pedro Martinez pitch his last game in a Red Sox uniform. We may very well, if we, you know, with Derek Lowe going, we may see him for the last time in a Red Sox uniform. And there are any number of other people who are free agents and who really can't expect to get offers from the Red Sox that would match what they are likely to get on the open market. So
it's kind of sad, isn't it, Bill?
Well, it's sad, except it's the way baseball is these days.
I mean, for the fans, though, you get attached to people.
You get
on the
attached,
team
and I think that's true. You especially tend to get attached when the team goes all the way to the World Series
right.
and looks as if it's going to win it. You know, this is, of course, the reality of the game today.
In addition to Derek Lowe and Pedro Martinez, there's Jason Varitek, the great Red Sox catcher, and newcomer Orlando Cabrera, who's become such a fan favorite at shortstop, and I can't see any way all four of those guys return. So that's a great point by Bill. There is a degree of sadness to that.
Yeah, there is. The speculation has been that Varitek will be the guy they will concentrate on, not only because he's very, very important to the team, but because unlike Pedro Martinez, he has, and Derek Lowe to some extent, Varitek has expressed real interest in staying where he is. The other two have made some comments that indicate that maybe it's time to move on.
Let's go to Concord. Don joins us on the air. Hi, Don. Go ahead. Thanks for calling. Go ahead, Don.
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I wrote a song in 1986, and it played on like 12 radio stations throughout New England, and this is my chance to redeem myself.
You wrote a song about the Red Sox?
Yes.
Can you sing it for us?
Yes.
Is it long?
It's not too long.
Okay. What's too long?
That was a host's question, if there ever was one.
It's nicely not an
done.
Opera.
There's a part where I say here we go, and the crowd goes here we go. So anyways, here it goes.
So, and we should say 86 was what was happening, Vin, in 86?
The Buckner year.
Okay, the Buckner year. Okay, go ahead, Don.
At Fenway Park, they're setting the stage. Out from the dark, it's a winning rage. Keeping the fans on the edge of their seats. This Red Sox team just can't be beat. Some who live in the past can recall how in the end they lost it all. But there's something about this team. Yes, they're living the impossible dream. Here we go, here we go, here we go. Yeah, we're going all the way. Here we go, here we go. Boston's going all the way.
Almost 20 years later, Don, you're redeemed, or at least I hope you will be. Good
but
for
there's
you.
More.
Oh, there's more. Well, I think that might be...
They're breaking records left and right. The New York Yankees are nowhere in sight. The Boston Red Sox can now stand tall. The big green monster says it all. You know the fans have waited so long. Like in 86, they've been hitting strong. And what about their better half? You know I'm talking about that pitching staff. Here we go, here we go, here we go. Yeah, we're going all the way. Here we go, here we go, here we go. Boston's going all the way.
Hooray, Don. Thank you very much for calling.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. That was great. That was wonderful. Just shows you the devotion of those fans.
Laura, you would be astonished at the number of these songs that people have been sending in. My favorite is one that is sung to the tune of I Wish I Were a Rich Man, and I'm not going to sing it.
Oh, please. Just a little bit. Just give us a flavor.
I'm sorry. Then there's another one that was sent in to the tune of the theme from Mr. Ed, which is something like a curse is a curse, of course, if no one's the Babe Ruth of the curse of a horse. I don't know. It goes on like that. You know, people get into this stuff, and I, as far as I'm concerned, they're all responsible for all the good things that are happening now.
That's
they should
great.
All take credit and enjoy it, and that's where we are.
But the problem is, as both of you said earlier, when bad things happen, Red Sox fans take credit, too, or take it very personally. So that's the downside.
Well, they accept the pain. And this is part of what has defined being a Red Sox fan for many, many years. And, you know, people, I'm not the first person to say this, but when the Red Sox do win the World Series, it is going to require many people to kind of rethink how their lives are organized.
Let's go to Webster next, and Jim is on the air. Hi, Jim, go ahead.
Hi, Laura. How are you?
Fine. You going to sing a song for us?
No, I'm not.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Vin and Bill, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
I've been saying this ever since the start of the year. This is next year. And a lot of people laughed at me through the time, but I'm a lifelong Red Sox fan. I've seen them break my heart so many times. I'm ready for this, and I think it's going to be a sweep.
Now, why did you think at the beginning of this year, Jim, that this was the year? Because, I mean, let's face it, fans say that every year.
Well, I went to opening day this year, so, and we talked on your show, actually, about going to opening day, and it's an experience just to do that. And like Bill was saying about the Red Sox fans, they take it personally, everything that happens all the way through the season. As someone that listened or watched every single game this year with my wife and kids, it just felt right. And the turnaround point was when Jason Varitek and A-Rod went at it. It was like we were 10 games out at that point.
What do you think,
and
Vin?
Yeah. There has been a logical reason to believe this is the year, too. The Red Sox came so close last year and made the key offseason acquisitions of Curt Schilling and Keith Foulke. The Red Sox have gone for it this year, including the big Nomar trade. So everything they've done has been geared to winning it this year, including letting their free agents go unsigned. It's all been designed toward winning the World Series this year.
Okay, I'm going to be a wet blanket now for just a minute, Bill and Vin. What happens, Vin, if the Sox lose this year? I mean, that just seems almost to be a pain too great to be endured by anybody.
We get one of the greatest sports stories of all time. You know, if the Red Sox go down in history as the team that came back from 3-0 to win the American League Championship Series and then lost the World Series after being up 3-0, it would be the most incredible combination choke story, comeback story of all time in baseball.
Yeah, last year was so bad. The day after the Aaron Boone home run, it was like people had lost a family member. To look at the shock and the morose atmosphere around people's offices, around schools, and I think this would be worse.
Oh, it would be far worse. It would be far worse because of what they did against the Yankees this time around.
Let's go to Julie next. She's calling from Hubbardston. Hi, Julie. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you?
Fine.
I was calling just because we have had so much fun as a family this year. My father, my cousins, my kids. It's the first year my kids have been able to watch and understand, and we have just had the best time. My mom was in the hospital, and visiting her in the hospital, you know, the nurses and the doctors and everybody there was celebrating as the series went on. And we don't believe as much in, you know, the curses and things like that, although you kind of fall victim to them. But this year we've been eating Baby Ruth for the last 3 weeks. Even though we say we don't believe.
The candy bars. Yeah.
Candy bars.
How did you figure out that was a good thing that would help the Red Sox rather than a bad thing that would reinforce whatever supernatural powers Ruth holds over the team?
I don't know. I think
you just like them. They're good.
Well, we definitely like them as a family.
I think people sort of stumble into these things, too. They do something good happens,
right,
and they see a cause-effect. It's, oh, that worked before. I better
that
keep
worked,
doing
it
that.
It might work again. Yeah, that's probably exactly right.
Well, Julie, I haven't bought my Halloween candy yet, so maybe I'll sort of perpetuate, you know, although it'll be over by then, won't it?
It will
we can go
be.
Shopping today.
There you go. Right.
The celebration will still be going.
And eat some myself.
Consume far too many.
Julie, it's great to hear from you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Well, gentlemen, I just have two last quick questions for you because we're almost out of time. Actually, one silly question. I'm not a big sports fan, but I watch when it gets exciting like this. You know, I stay up and watch with everybody else. Bill Littlefield, why do ball players chew so much?
Well, weirdly enough, they chew less now, Laura, than they used to because Major League Baseball and to a far greater extent Minor League Baseball has taught the players something about the dangers of tobacco. It used to be that a great many more major leaguers would chew tobacco, and there was a huge free stash of chewing tobacco in every major league clubhouse, and that's no longer the case. I don't know why they have to have sunflower seeds or tobacco or bubble gum or some combination of the three in their mouths at all times. I don't know why they have to spit all the time. I have a feeling that it may be partly that they wish to reinforce the idea that as long as they're employed by a baseball team, they are under no obligation to ever grow up. And so they spit, you know, like little boys on the playground or something.
Vin, what do you think?
Well, part of it is...
I was just looking at the game last night, you know, again, as a newcomer, relative newcomer, going, why do they chew so much?
There's a lot of downtime in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
It's constantly tense, but there's time between pitches. there can be long gaps of time when you're in the fields that you go without a ball having hit to you. So you're tense and you have nothing to do, and chewing and spitting is something to do to ease some of that tension.
Bill, you're in Boston. What will the scene be like down there if they win tonight?
Well, I have kind of mixed feelings about that. I'm as much in favor of a big happy party as anybody else, but of course the unhappy tradition in professional sports in this country lately has been for people to behave like idiots when their teams win or when their teams lose. And we have, of course, the recent incident down here in Boston where a 21-year-old woman was shot to death by a policeman with a pellet gun after the Red Sox beat the Yankees. I certainly hope that fans will be more responsible and that they will behave a little more, in a more organized and sensible fashion. And I certainly hope that the police will refrain from shooting into the crowd.
We've had a couple incidents on college campuses here in New Hampshire, too, Vin, mm-hmm. right, regarding the Red Sox.
That's right. Plymouth State just expelled several students. UNH has had incidents in the past. I know what I'm planning to do, and we talk so much about how being a Red Sox fan is something you inherit. I'm really looking forward to getting on the phone with my parents down in Florida after this is over, with getting together with a couple of neighbors and having a glass of champagne. And I know the phone calls and emails are going to be coming in literally from around the country, just as they did in mourning after Game 7 last year. So I'm really looking forward to sharing this with my family and my friends.
Okay, last question. It's a quick one. Bill Littlefield, dare you predict the outcome of this series?
I think the Red Sox are on a cosmic roll. I just wouldn't be a bit surprised if they swept the series, if they won again tonight and swept the series. But if they lose tonight, I fully expect them to win it in five. And if it takes six, okay, I'll go with six. And if it's seven, it's a great story, and I'll take the Red Sox in seven.
Ben?
I predicted a sweep in another medium yesterday morning, and I'll stick with that.
Okay, gentlemen. Well, thank you both very much. Bill Littlefield, thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
And Vin Sylvia, thank you very much.
Thanks, Laura.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.